Hi, I'm Dr. Fidelio, and this is Go Beyond Greatness, Season 3, Episode 1. Class is in session, and you are hooked. Joining me today is Alexander Deeb. Alexander is co-founder and CEO of Class Hook, a company that enables teachers to find and effectively use educational videos from popular TV shows and movies in their lessons. Alex has a passion for creating positive social good in the world, and he believes that improving education is the best way to create that impact. In his free time, Alex enjoys reading about physics, space, economics, and many other topics. He also watches a lot of television and movies, so do I, is really into fitness and gaming, and has participated in competitive gaming tournaments for several years. One of his favorite quotes is from, am I saying this right, Kofi Annan?
I believe so.
Kofi Annan, which states, knowledge is power, information is liberating, education is the premise of progress, in every society, in every family. Please welcome Alexander Deeb. Yay! Thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
Wow, so much has happened in the last couple of days with technology and education. Tell me, how did Class Hook come to be?
Great question. So when we started Class Hook, it came from my personal experience with learning. After I got my undergraduate degree in business, I thought about what made some of my learning experiences more memorable than others. And it came down to it being relevant in the relevance piece of learning. My learning was more relevant because I made connections to it, because I was more engaged in class. And so I thought, how much opportunity would be, or it was wasted or potentially lost in the classroom when students aren't engaged and aren't invested in their learning and aren't creating memorable learning experiences. So I looked into the problem of student engagement and what makes a memorable learning experience. And long story short, we came up with ClassHook to solve that problem.
Have you always been a techie? Is this something that, you know, growing up, you said, you know what, I want to develop websites. I love technology. Is this something that you just knew you wanted to be?
I didn't think I wanted to be a techie. I see myself more as like a business person who leverages technology to solve problems, because in essence, that's what technology is for, right? It's to solve problems. It's not just to exist as a thing. There is a lot of cool tech out there that exists, and you look at it and you say, oh, that's really cool. But it doesn't really solve a problem. There's not much utility in it. A lot of that tech is sometimes applied to solve problems, but if it's not applied in a useful manner, you know, my belief is it's not really worth it. And it's not, it's not standing alone. And I think that applies a lot to education as well, where we should be using technology in a way that solves problems. And so I see myself as a business person who has technical skills.
That's a really unique way of looking at things. I think that oftentimes we tell our students, you know, technology, technology, technology. And sometimes when you push it down somebody, they just kind of end up backing up and say, I don't know if I really want to study that. But I do like the way you brought it out by saying that you're a business person who leverages products and services via technology. That's a really great way to kind of phrase it. Maybe that's a different lens or different focal point that as educators, we need to start looking at finding solutions to everyday problems. And so that's a really cool way to channel that. That's really interesting. So oftentimes when we were in the classroom, because right now a lot of us are working remotely from home because of the dreaded COVID-19, and hopefully we find a cure. I believe we will. But oftentimes administrators, that being like principals or assistant principals or just evaluators of educators, have this misconception. And some of the misconceptions about using film in the classroom is, well, you know, you're feeding off of that. You know, that's an easy thing to do. You can find something on YouTube and just play it. You know, there's something really creative about that. How are you augmenting video in the classroom for your opening hook and all that stuff, right? So what do you think is the biggest misconception about using film in the classroom?
I think there are two perspectives. One is the legality of it, and then the other one is the efficacy of it. So how you use film, can, like any other type of content, can be used effectively. Technically, you can use textbooks effectively. We've been using them for many years. It's just now there's a shift away because we think there is better solutions. But in some cases, you know, a textbook and the type of content that comes from a textbook can be used really effectively. So to tackle the first one about the legality, so film you can use in the classroom. I'm not a lawyer, so don't take this as legal advice, but there are exceptions in the Copyright Act that allow educators to use film in streaming online video as well in the classroom. And one of those is a face-to-face teaching exemption, which says that teachers do not need permission from copyright owners to use film and use copyrighted works in their lessons if it's in the course of face-to-face teaching, which could mean like a physical classroom. It can even be an online class. There are some other restrictions there, but you're able to use film for the most part in a nonprofit institution, which most public K-12 schools are. The other one is about the efficacy. So you can play a movie in class and just have your students watch it and fill out a worksheet. We all know that they don't like doing that. They don't like filling out the questions on the worksheet. Sometimes they don't even do it. showing a full-length film is not an effective use of class time. I think that's one of the misconceptions about it, is if I do use film, I have to show the full movie. And the case is you don't have to. You can actually show very short clips that are short, straight to the point, and help accomplish your lesson objectives and enhance the lesson rather than be your entire lesson. So I think that film can be used very effectively in class. You just have to use it like any other type of content or any other tool. You have to use it the right way.
I 100% agree. When I was getting my master's in creative writing, one of the things that I was studying was educational films used in education. And it didn't really necessarily have to be educational films. It was just the idea of using maybe the first 15 minutes or using 15-minute sequences of movies and scenes, and just to kind of identify what the emotion was that you were showing with students. It could be a documentary and so forth. And so studying film for me was a big thing for me at the master's grad level. And I even produced a documentary because it just fascinated me, and ultimately became a film teacher for International Baccalaureate. And I was an IB film year one, year two teacher. And the year two is kind of like a practicum, but year one, my former students would tell you, we saw maybe like over 200 films, you know, based off of genre. And part of it was also identifying different scenes and, you know, the moods that the lights play and the characterizations and director takes and just things like that. And ultimately the second year they start making their very own film, right? Based off of hopefully some of these movies that are classics that have inspired them, like Jaws and Poltergeist and all. My favorite, you know, of all time has to be Jaws and Jurassic Park. It's a tough one between both of them, but I love both of those movies so much. I just love Steven Spielberg. But it's interesting to see how, you know, you can really gain so much out of film. And I think 15-minute segments can do that too. What I loved about Class Hook and what I've seen from it from my perspective is that you have it divided into not so much genres, but on how students can actually learn, like by topic. And so I noticed one of my other favorite topics is SEL, social emotional learning. And you actually have that built in there too. So social emotional learning, it's obviously one of my all time favorite topics. And I do geek out and nerd out from time to time talking about that. But it's part of the reason why this podcast exists in the first place. So how can Class Hook teach social emotional learning?
That's a great question. And I want to preface that by saying we added videos on social emotional learning because we saw the potential and we saw the move for many schools to start teaching it. And they saw what kind of an integral role it plays in the child's development and child's learning. So class hook can be used a lot of different ways in social emotional learning. So one of the, a lot of educators will know the CASEL five core competencies of SEL. And we align our videos to and categorize our videos by those core competencies like self-management, self-discipline, and the rest of them. So you can use class hook to showcase a lot of situations in which social emotional learning comes into play. So there's a great movie called Home from 2015. The premise is that an alien comes from outer space. It's all animated, by the way. So an alien comes from outer space. The alien they come to talk to the humans, and they, I'm trying to remember the plot here.
That's the one with Jennifer Lopez, right?
I
think she's voiced in there.
It's possible. They have a lot of top tier actors who are voicing the characters there. And the alien in the movie, he changes colors based on his emotions. So this allows students to visualize how different emotions look and feel, in a sense.
Yeah.
And the main character is a girl who notices whenever the alien is making different, or is lying, or is experiencing different levels of emotion. That's one way in which you can showcase emotions, and one of the core competencies of identifying emotions and managing emotions to students. Other ones are situations in which students will have to inevitably come across conflict in life. And a lot of movies and television shows showcase conflict resolution, solving problems. All these different skills and situations are very much made real and made realistic as well in movies and television. So it's a great, classic is a great way to support your students in learning these skills. And not only do you just show them the video, we want you to take it a step further and have a discussion about what they're seeing in the clip, how they're understanding it, analyzing the clip, and looking for these key indicators of what the characters are going through. Whether they're angry, you might look at their facial expressions or their verbal language. If they are confused, you might look at some of those characteristics as well, or you might see how they're kind of fumbling around, not really sure what they're doing. There are a lot of the visual elements of SEL that you can bring to life through film, and we support educators in finding those scenes.
I love that. There's this movie that I also love a lot, and it's called Young Adult, and it has Academy Award winner Charlize Theron. I'm not really sure how you pronounce her last name, but Charlize is by far like a phenomenal actress. She's been in so many movies like Monster and so forth, right? But in this one movie that she did called Young Adult, there's a scene where she's meeting her ex-boyfriend and his now, I guess, wife. And she's in the living room, and she's kind of disgusted just looking at, you know, how her ex-boyfriend is now with, you know, this young girl and all that stuff, and he's married to her, and you know, they have kids, and she basically asks the now wife, right? She's like, what do you do? And she's like, well, I'm an educator. And she sees a poster, and she picks up a poster, and the poster has basically social emotional learning, like faces, right? Like little emojis, like happy, sad, you know, angry, upset. And she goes, I teach kids how to, you know, channel their emotions and, you know, understand all that stuff. And she's like, what if you just don't feel anything? And she's like, well, you always feel something. And she's like, but what if you don't? And I mean, that right there is kind of like at the heart of social emotional learning. You know, it's like really identifying how you feel, understanding what feelings are, right? Having empathy and understanding the difference between that and sympathy and all of that. But I mean, I just think that's a great little scene to really identify what social emotional learning is for adults. You know, it's easy for young kids, but for adults, I think that's like the perfect little scene. But speaking economics now, because I did hear earlier when I was reading your bio that you're into economics. So I told the listeners that I would nerd out from time to time, so they totally understand. But speaking economics right now, which are you're also fascinated with and I'm fascinated with too, but the study of like production, distribution, and consumption of goods and services, what are your thoughts on the current economic climate in regards to COVID-19? The dreaded COVID-19.
Yeah, so I guess we have to take into account different industries and also the global economy as a whole. So a lot of, you know, the supply chain is impacted by the closing of factories in China. Hopefully those are starting to reopen so that a lot of industries like sneakers and manufacturing and a lot of, you know, laptops and such won't be impacted quite as much. So on the global side, I think we were seeing a decline, but we might expect to see it pick back up again, hopefully soon. If not, we might start to see a move towards more local manufacturing at either the national or regional levels, because it has become apparent that there's this, you know, increase in reliance on China, and that was made evident before. It's just now we're seeing some of the consequences of having a centralized like consolidation of certain goods being manufactured in a specific location. And not to bash, you know, the industry for that, mm-hmm. there's a good reason why a lot of the manufacturing happens in China, not just because of the cost, but it also they have the expertise that other regions don't quite have in terms of manufacturing certain goods. I talked to someone who is working in a business where they manufacture sneakers, and they are reliant on manufacturing in China. And I asked him, why don't you look for manufacturing elsewhere? He said, well, we can manufacture in Argentina and Brazil, but they're just not as good. And this is someone who's been in the industry for 20 plus years. So he's not a new to the situation. So we might start to see, and I'm not an economist on the New York Times, for example, but we might start to see more backup plans in place for alternative manufacturing options, whether that is in different places. At the national economy level, for the United States, I think we've been seeing a lot of increase, and this might be global as well, increase in, you know, delivery services, logistics. Those are all being bombarded. Amazon, I think, can't fulfill orders until May or something because of how much demand they're getting. So we might even see an increase in and we might see even more of an expedite in terms of people just doing at-home delivery services. And that might just be because of fears of due to whatever the next pandemic might be, or just some residual like panic or residual challenges that people are having now with the existing pandemic, with COVID-19.
I think that the fear that I'm starting to see resonate in a lot of people is, do you remember, I don't know, if I'm 33 years old, I don't know how old you are, but I mean, do you remember, I feel like we're the same age, but do you remember Y2K?
Yes.
And like the fear that that kind of put, it was like this feeling of unsettledness. It was like waiting for that second shoe to drop and you're like, Y2K, it's coming, you know, 1999, going into, you know, 2000, computers are gonna blow up, it's happening. Now, granted, Alex, we didn't have the technology that we have now in 2000. Like if that kind of thing were to happen now, people would go to social media, go to CNN, go to MSNBC, Fox. They'd find like legit resources. I don't know, they'd go to Drudge Report. I mean, they'd go everywhere, you know, to find whether this is something that's for real or not, or if it's just, you know, fear, you know, and what it is. But I mean, I think that that's kind of like what we're going through now times 10. You know, because we have social media, we have best friends and we have cousins and we have everybody sharing and just sharing. And it becomes almost like an oversharing network of information that's readily available to us at our fingertips. And we're seeing nurses break down outside of their hospitals saying, be careful. And for every nurse, there's like two more like doctors that are in medicine saying two different things, you know, and it's so interesting. It's an interesting time. I don't think anything spreads faster than fear by word of mouth, and social media just adds fuel to that fire. And I think that ultimately will impact production, distribution, and the consumption of goods and services. How we consume, our consumer behavior is going to be totally impacted by this from this point forward. Consumer behavior is another thing that I'm really fascinated about. What are your thoughts on consumer behavior? This is just a follow-up question in regards to all of that.
In regards to the current situation.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of, you know, panic buying happening with the toilet paper situation. And that's very much like emotional purchases. They're not logical by any means. It's not like COVID-19 affects our demand or would create an effect or would affect our demand for toilet paper, for example, and other, you know, household goods. It's just people are uncertain. And when there is a situation in which people are uncertain, they like to make sure they have the essentials, and it makes them feel as if they're more in control of the situation, which is why you see huge grocery purchases, huge purchases of toilet paper and other essentials. It's not logical by any means, because the supply chain has not really been impacted. A lot of, for toilet paper, for example, a lot of toilet paper manufacturing, almost all of it is done in the US. So we're not relying on China or others. And there are 50 plus companies that manufacture it. There's a lot of companies that manufacture it. There's no shortage by any means currently. The challenge is like the logistics of getting it from the manufacturer to the store. But so I think there's a little bit of hysteria that has caused this sort of panic, emotional purchases to happen. But we will, as always, like with anything, we'll start to see that wane down, and things will start getting back to normal, hopefully soon.
I agree. I hope soon too. How is it? You're coming in from, I'm zooming in to San Francisco, right? So what does it look like right now in San Francisco? What is the vibe? You're walking down the street. Are people keeping their social distance? Are you talking to your neighbors? Do you see a lot of, you know, cleanliness out there that you didn't see before? And what is it, kind of describe the environment, paint us a picture of San Francisco right now where you're at.
Sure. I can only talk to what I've seen on social media, because I'm actually not going out too much. I'm practicing social distancing. But what I've seen from going out either to the store is, you know, the store, grocery stores and places like Target are packed. There's just people who are always there just trying to get what they need, maybe because they weren't able to find it before, or maybe they're panic buying, I'm not sure. But there are certain stores that like have the essentials and grocery stores that are that have been packed. The streets are pretty empty, even in like San Francisco downtown. So people aren't really out and about, but you'll see a consolidation of people at parks and recreational facilities where, you know, they want to get their exercise in, they want to go out and see nature. Because if you're just walking around in the city, there's not really much to do. Every place is closed for the most part, and restaurants, like most other places in the nation, are just open for takeout or pickup. So there's there's just a few places to go, and people are consolidating. I think the situation isn't quite as bad here, and people are a little more used to the quarantining and, you know, sheltering in place here, because the city and the state, I think, has been a little more proactive than some other areas of the country. So people are already more accustomed to it. You know, we've been sheltering in place for at least 2 weeks now. So it's very much becoming like the new normal, at least for the short term.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. So staying at home, sheltering in place, a lot of people turn to Zoom to communicate with family and friends, or turn into FaceTime, Uvu, like all those different, you know, streaming platforms that exist to communicate. I'm turning to it. But also the gaming industry, I would imagine right now is somewhat booming because a lot of people are staying home, you know. And I heard earlier that you were into competitive games, and so competitive gaming tournaments, not too long ago, there were parents and guardians, and maybe they're still out there, I'm not sure, but they were totally against video games and kids playing video games, and now there's like career options that are happening. There's career opportunities, and esports is coming to the forefront in education. So what are your thoughts in regards to esports?
I'm very much a proponent of it. I think whereas you see traditional sports as a viable career option, esports is starting to become sort of that. And the difference is mostly physical versus mental, where physical sports like football and baseball and all those require a lot of physical activity. Yes, there is a mental aspect to the game as well, whereas but it does require the combination of the two, whereas esports is largely mental. You do need to stay physically in shape to keep your, you know, physical and mental health is connected. So if you're not keeping one in shape, the other one is going to suffer. But esports is just heavily a more like cerebral type sport where you are competing, you are performing a lot of the same intense activity. It's just you're not seeing it done physically, which is why people might not equate it to be, you know, the same caliber as physical sports. I think parents are starting to be more supportive of their children because they're seeing that this is a viable option and a viable career path. Whereas video games, even like a decade, even maybe 5 years ago, were seen as a hobby or something you do as fun or something that's kind of, you just do to kill time. It's not something serious. But they're starting to see the payouts and they're starting to see the investment by not only companies, but individuals in this space. And it's becoming more of a serious thing. And the benefit of it as well is that you can do it from your home. You can practice from home. In the industry, you know, there's a lot of in-person tournaments where you're physically present. And even some games that I'm participating in are starting to take some of those online right now for the time being, given the current situation. So I think this is going to expedite the shift to a lot more online tournaments and a lot more games taking place online, even games that traditionally are not being able to be played online, you know, with advances in technology, or there are ways that people have found to play these games online. So esports, very much a proponent. I would not be a participant myself, but I can't say I haven't thought about potentially going pro.
Not yet. Soon. Okay, so it's Sharecase time. Sharecase time. This is actually new. I've never done this before, but I'm adding it to season 3. Sharecase time. This is where I let you have the platform to share your case. Sharecase. So, is there a message that you would like to sharecase to the world right now?
Yeah, I'd like to tell everyone that it's, you know, we're living in unprecedented times, so make sure to take care of yourself, catch up with friends that you haven't spoken to in a while. I know I've been doing that. It's just a great time to be reconnecting with everyone and making sure that everyone and yourself are healthy and okay.
That's a good message. Next Sharecase message, is there a message that you would like to sharecase to young entrepreneurs in elementary?
Yes, keep it up. You're only limited by your own thoughts. Entrepreneurs show time and time again that they make the impossible possible. So whatever crazy idea you have, whatever you're passionate about and working on, really take the initiative and the drive to explore more and work on it. And don't get discouraged by people who tell you this is a crazy idea. I've heard a lot of serial entrepreneurs say, that's a good sign that you're onto something when they tell you it's a crazy idea. So keep it up, keep up the great work, and don't ever stop coming up with ideas, working on businesses. It's very much a part of life and you're gonna learn a lot of valuable lessons along the way. Even if it doesn't work out, you can still always start another company or another venture. So keep up the great work.
I like that. You are only limited to your own thoughts. And so that is awesome. I mean, you can just keep thinking and dreaming. So hashtag that, Alex Deeb. Is there a message that you would like to sharecase with educators around the world?
One, I want to thank you for all the hard work that you're doing every day. And now, especially with shifting all of your curriculum online, and doing it in such a short manner, in a short time frame, that's really impressive. We're all impressed by you. We all appreciate all the work you're doing to support students every day. And if there's anything that Classhook can do to support you, let us know. We're here to support you.
Thank you so much for that. And I think that just resonates with all the educators that are hopefully going to watch this or see this or hear this. So thank you for that. I want to end this with a rapid round of questions. Rapid. So we're going to answer these questions rapidly, and I'm going to ask you these questions rapidly. And here we go. Texting or talking?
Talking.
Favorite day of the week?
Monday.
Would you rather be able to speak every language in the world or be able to talk to animals?
I'd rather be able to speak every language in the world.
Invisibility or super strength?
Super strength.
Is it wrong for a vegetarian to eat animal crackers?
No, I'm a vegetarian and I don't think it's a problem.
Last but not least, Alexander Deeb is on Twitter. You can find him at Alexander Deeb, D-E-E-B. And you can find Class Hook via Twitter too, at Class Hook. Get hooked. It's an awesome website and it's an awesome tool that not only hits up on social emotional learning, but can really get your kids to make those connections to real world situations. So Alex, thank you so much for taking time to join my podcast today. You're going to have to come back.
Sure. Thank you for having me. Would be happy to join you again.
All right, everybody. Thank you for tuning in and I'll be seeing you soon. Take care, wash your hands, and here are some coronavirus tips. 1, stay home as much as you can. 2, keep a safe distance. 3, wash your hands often. 4, cover your cough. And 5, if you're sick, call ahead. I know that we're gonna get through this. Other than that, I'll see you next time. Bye.